Okay, we want to meet, introduce a couple of special guests here with us today. Could you give us your name and your position with the Wildlife Corridor, and both of you two?
Sure.
You're Marley.
Marley, yes.
Marley Fuller. Now, everybody listening out there, please don't call up and say, hey, are you related to Manly Fuller? I'm sure you get that a lot.
I get it a lot, and when it works, it works. So yes. Sometimes, you know, he might be in the lineage somewhere.
I spent a lot of time with him in those old days, and he last I heard, he went to North Carolina to work in Fish and Wildlife business. So I haven't heard of him for many years, but I thought it was interesting when she called up. That's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, we stand on the shoulders of giants.
That's right. And you're with the Wildlife Corridor.
I'm with the Wildlife Corridor Foundation. I am the Strategic Communications Director, and I'm joined here with our Gallery Operations Manager.
Hi there. I'm Liz Nail. I'm the Gallery Operations Manager at Wild Space Gallery.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, can you give a we were kind of surprised to find out that there was a Wildlife Corridor headquarters or a building or whatever you call it out here in St. Pete. Because the corridor stretches all the way from the Georgia line, right, and all the way down to through Big Cypress to the Everglades, and so I figured, well, it'd be up near Tallahassee or something. But how come? But then again, a lot of environmental agencies have their regional headquarters here, like NOAA, like Center for Biological Diversity. There's a bunch of them that are here that with. Basically famous people that are leading them that all over the country. And so our show does go all over the country.
All over the state, not the country. Well, I don't think we've left the state.
No. What I'm saying is, Tim, a lot of you got to talk to Joe. A lot of these things are repackaged.
As far as we broadcast, I thought you were saying broadcasting from.
No, the rebroadcast of the show goes all the Pacifica Network and everything. So, you know. Well, tell us a little bit about how this happened.
Yeah, so, Pete, as you know, the corridor has very deep roots. I mean, you were working on a paper back in 1989, right. So it's been around. The concept has been around for several years now. And just over a decade ago, our founder, Carlton Ward Jr., who's a National Geographic wildlife photographer, started sharing the story of the Florida Wildlife Corridor, traveling through the state. He and our CEO, Mallory Dimmitt, took a 1,000-mile trek from the Everglades across 100 days all the way up to the Georgia border, and their partnership and what they did to raise awareness around the corridor in those earlier days helped eventually lead to the creation of what ultimately became known as the Florida Wildlife Corridor Foundation. So they live here locally. Mallory's in St. Pete. Carlton's just across the pond over there in Tampa. Mm-hmm. And so it made sense to build a team in this area as we continue to grow. So today we champion a collaborative campaign to permanently connect, protect, and restore the Florida Wildlife Corridor. And as Pete was saying, the corridor is 18 million connected acres that span from the Everglades up to Georgia-Alabama borders. And
How wide is it?
It varies in different locations. Yeah, so if you look at it on the map and you kind of scroll out on Google Earth, any of those green connected spaces, you can kind of almost make it out yourself as you're looking at it on Google Earth. So more inland, there are some parts of it that touch the coast, like in the Nature Coast, and then further south, of course, when you get to the Everglades.
And the point is animals must move. Species must move.
But, you know, one of the things that as more scientists are focusing on the corridor and doing research around what its impacts are, not only with wildlife, but also for humans. So what we're learning is that keeping those lands connected is important to protect us against strengthening storms, to keep our fresh waters clean and abundant. So there are a variety of additional benefits for humans, not just for wildlife, mm-hmm. like it says in the name.
Right. In fact, when they first put in the wildlife underpasses in the roads, they got all kinds of pictures of humans coming through there, hunters, you know, walking through there.
That's funny.
Yeah, anglers and hunters are mm-hmm. very important to the movement.
That's absolutely right. So you've got a program today and in the afternoon and also tonight where people can come and they can visit. What you've got going on there. Maybe tell us a little bit about that and what your plans are for the future there.
Yeah, that's right. So
it's on the south side of St. Pete.
It's in the south side. Yeah, so we're in the Arts Warehouse District. We're at the factory. It's where the fairgrounds are held too. So it's about 8 buildings, and it's kind of an artist conglomerate. And there's where we are located. We're in Building 7, and it's called hashtag Gallery Row. And so there's, including us, we have 6 galleries right next to each other. And this afternoon at 3 p.m., we have a talk with Carol Mickett. Her exhibit with Robert Stackhouse, Mickett Stackhouse Studios, is called Circle of Water, is on display right now in our Wild Space Gallery. And it talks about the connection of water and why it is important to us, what Marley just touched on, and how, especially in Florida, how the salt water and the fresh water kind of connect to each other. And the wildlife corridor is very important to keep them, you know, separate as well, to keep fresh water fresh. Mm-hmm. So this afternoon, Carol will be talking with a professor from USF, Dr. Albert Hein, and, you know, talking about sea level rise and how climate change is affecting us in Florida mainly. And so that will be at 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And then this evening, we also have an event going on, a screening. I think Marley will tell you a little bit more about that as well.
Yeah, so 3 p.m. at the factory is the artist talk. If you'd like to join us, we'll have some bites and some beverages there to help entertain you along the way. And then this evening, we will be showing for the first time to the public our most recent expedition documentary short film, which is called O2O, Path to Connection. And it's very special on today specifically because it's Veterans Day. So thank you to all you veterans out there listening for your sacrifice. And I hope that you can make it to explore this new film of ours. So we followed 3 military veterans from the Ocala to the Osceola National Forest, and they encountered...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that was earlier this year. They encountered many of our partners, including the North Florida Land Trust, Florida Trails Association, and Camp Blanding, and together they all kind of explored the importance of keeping these lands connected.
Were
and
they,
then also...
Were they hiking?
They were hiking, biking, and paddling. So there's a couple different ways that they traversed that corridor there. And the experiences that they had is really special. And I think the message about not just keeping these landscapes connected for wildlife and humans and our quality of life, but also being able to have these places to explore and the benefit that we have mentally and emotionally when we do experience these wild places.
Absolutely. Well, what are your plans for the future out there? Are you going to have some kind of a museum or something?
Well, we're starting with the gallery first, and we'll have rotating exhibitions. Mm-hmm. The Circle of Water that's on display now will be through January 13th, and then we'll continue to have exhibitions after that. So the next one will be with Archbold Biological Station, which is stationed down in Venus, mm-hmm. Florida, mm-hmm. near going towards Okeechobee, and they're one of our partners too. And we get a lot of our research from them. And then after that, we have an exhibit right now called You Are Here. It's a bunch of photography and the different areas of Florida. It's actually in the Florida House in Washington, D.C. right now. And so that'll be coming to us on display as well. And so all of these exhibits give us a chance to want to talk about what the corridor is for those that don't know it, but also give accessibility to art and nature and how those two combine. So we really want to emphasize like how nature is healing and how it is accessible to everybody. Our gallery is open to the public and it's free. And you know, we're continuing to work on exhibits that involve multiple generations and demographics.
So you have a lot of evidence that the animals do move.
Yes, they do move.
If it's protected. Yes. Or sometimes if it's not, they run across the road, you know.
Correct.
How much luck are you having with landowners when you approach them and say, hey, can you deed part of this property to this movement in return for the tax write-off or whatever the benefit that they get from it?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Sure. Well, so the Corridor Foundation is not in land trust. The land trust really directly works with the landowners to help them get those permanently conserved easements through either the Florida Forever program with DEP.
But they hook up with the corridor, though.
But right. So our role more so as the Corridor Foundation is to help raise awareness both about the benefits of keeping these lands connected and the opportunities, but then also to advocate for consistent, meaningful state funding. And so over the last couple of years since the signing of the Florida Wildlife Corridor Act in 2021, we've seen $400 million designated for conservation in the Florida Forever program. There's also the Rural and Family Lands Protection Program, which has hundreds of millions of dollars over the years that have been approved. And so our role in this organization is to keep sharing the story, keep sharing the importance. And I think as those landowners continue to see that there is that meaningful, consistent funding, they have started to come to the table. And DEP has shared that with us, is that they've seen an increase in landowner interest, I think, which shows a little bit of proof that this is working.
How much scrubland is in the corridor right now, Florida scrubland?
Oh, goodness. You know, the scrubland is one of those areas that people thought nobody will ever want to live there. There's no way. There's nothing out there. You don't want anything in the middle. But what we're seeing right now, both because of what's happening on the coast with these strengthening storms and then with 1,000 people a day moving to Florida, you're starting to see those parts of the state developed. And so what we've done is identified through an economic study where there are these urgent areas that the corridor is experiencing this rapid growth. And so those are really the places that we're getting in front of. So I don't have the stats in front of me today, Pete, of how much there is, but I think it's important for people to know that those areas are disappearing.
And one of the other reasons is they're great to build on because they're dry lands, and most of the interior of all of Florida was like that. And it's a certain type of pine trees and a lot of significant endangered species like the gopher tortoise and the scrub jay. Florida's only endemic bird.
Right.
And
I still think it should be the state bird, but.
Well, because it could be this.
I don't think you stand alone in that opinion. Yeah. There's a lot of conservationists out there.
The pelican, too, I wanted them to be declared the state seabird.
I like the idea of, distinguishing between bird and seabird, just, you know.
Why not?
Yeah. I said I like the idea.
Yeah. But the scrub jay, I've been advocating. I think there's one or two songs that we've ever run into that had a scrub jay in it, but it's been forgotten. I don't know if there's a Save the Scrub Jay organization or anything else, but when you say it's the only endemic bird, there is a California scrub jay, but it's two different species, you know. So
interesting.
But it contributed to saving the Douglas property in Dunedin. That was the classic. Florida scrubland and it had the rosemary balds. It had everything right there. And here was Pulte Homes coming in there with a bulldozer and without even permission, knocking down a fence and putting an interstate-sized swath all the way down through that rosemary bald, running over who knows how many tortoises and everything else. And, of course, it was Tim and I went out there with cameras and we videotaped that, and we ended up sending it to every public official in Dunedin, and county commissioners in the Dunedin City. And pretty soon the people started hanging out on the highway with the signs.
Now, have you been by since it's been turned into a park?
I have.
It's really
yet.
Nice. They did a good job with the hiking trails. Amber and I were up in Dunedin not too long ago.
Oh, that's
right. And took a visit by there. Yeah, I don't know. It's exciting. And then eventually, I guess, Jerry Lake will be opened up to for
The Southwater, South Florida Water Management District owned the lake there. You know, they've also
some acreage of land around it. All told, I think it's going to be 100 acres or something.
And, the developer put his tail between his legs and got out of there because before he could come back on there, he had to relocate every tortoise that they could find out there, and he had to pay the fines of all the ones that they killed. And he had to follow all the gopher. He had to fill out the gopher tortoise. What is it called, Tim? The act that the paperwork that they had to fill out in order to go back in. Yeah, relocation papers and everything. And hundreds of thousands of dollars it would cost him to do that. Mm-hmm. And he'd have to have a scientist with all of them as they were walking through there saying, no, that's a gopher tortoise. Let's look in there and see if it's a dead tortoise. You know.
Oh, how awful. Thank you for that work that you did.
They just took off. They just took off and said, forget it, you know.
You know, one of the things that we found, and I know that sounds such a horrific story, but what we found over and over again is that if people actually knew what was going to happen when they made that decision to start developing, they wouldn't have acted upon it. So that's one of the reasons why, Pete, shows like this are so important,
yes.
because you're helping to raise awareness so that people understand the footprint of this geography, mm-hmm. and they know that, that there can be something different. So we're not anti-development. We would never say no development, but we can help with these maps and with our, the scientists that we work with help to understand where to develop, where not to develop.
No, and I think the Douglas property was a really good, like, kind of model for how to go about preserving these places, because it wasn't just any one funding source. There was a bunch of money raised from private donations. There was county money. There was state money. Like,
city.
It was just...
City money.
City money, mm-hmm. yep. Yeah, it all came together, all the different sources. And I think that's the way to do it. We're mm-hmm. all on... We all want the same thing, you know, clean water, clean air, clean land.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point. That's the only way it can be done. The state has been very generous, and we've been looked at as this almost national model because of the generosity of the budget here, but it is going to take more. It is going to take that private funding, that county funding, that federal funding. So it has to be everyone working together, and then, of course, the secret ingredient of the willing landowners. So important
too.
To help them feel celebrated and loved for the good work
and
that they're doing as well.
The residents, you know, just you and I, the people here that live here, just to get outside, you know, one of our pillars, one of our values, and our foundation itself is to get outside, and so we make it important for us as staff to do so, but also everyone here that moves here or is from here. We have wonderful state parks. We have wonderful, you know, green spaces, and just get outside to become, you know, aware of what's around you and to become part of the place you live in. That's so important.
And you know, often it takes an accident, like the big spill in the Peace River, you know, the phosphate spill or other types of things that have ruined entire rivers. It's taken years for them to recover, you know, places that people used to swim. And it's a new world out there. It's our new world. And now with the corridor, and I can't understand why they can't figure out new ways to build buildings mm-hmm. and for residents that don't harm the environment, you know. Mm-hmm. Solar power, you can name all the things that we know today, but sometimes I read in the magazines some of the things the Chinese are doing and other people are doing in other countries mm-hmm. that are fabulous. It can be done. It might be expensive, but then again, it should be, you know.
All right, you're listening to the Florida Folk Show on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM, WMTB LP St. Petersburg, where local music lives. Radio St. Pete would like to thank the Will McLean Foundation for their support for the Florida Folk Show. The foundation produces the annual Will McLean Music Festival, featuring all Florida artists, monthly concerts, and awards annual college scholarships. The Will McLean Foundation also operates the Florida Sand Music Ranch, formerly the Sertoma Youth Ranch. Thank you so much, Will McLean Foundation.
Yes, okay. So when can we get Carlton to come on the show?
I don't know. We have a tough time getting him as well. So.
There you go.
I think his family at one time owned a ranch out there near Limestone.
Mm-hmm.
Because we play out there once in a while in the Florida Boys band. And he came walking in. They have a big biker thing the last Saturday of every month, and he came walking over there. He said, "Oh, I've got a place just right down the road." You know, we never saw him again after that. But and I saw him, of course, the grand opening of the showing of the first
The Path of the Panther.
Path of the Panther. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he was just surrounded by people and talking, so I didn't get a chance to even say hi. But I'd love to get him on the show, really, and give his version of it, because putting all those cameras out there. Unbelievable. It when you see a panther, it either runs away from you or it hides, or you don't see it
if you can see it at all, right?
Yeah. And Jim Billy, the chief of the Seminoles, that actually shot one day, that was the first panther he had seen. He lived his whole life out in the swamp. It's the first one he saw, and of course they took him to court, and he was acquitted in one trial and a hung jury in another trial because they couldn't prove that that was a Florida panther, and that led to the beginning of the look-alike law, because the Florida panther prototype that's at Harvard University, doesn't have a crooked tail, doesn't have the spots on the back of the neck, you know, the things that were caused by inbreeding,
mm-hmm.
and so they felt like, well, you know, this is a Florida panther, how, you know, but mm-hmm. it didn't work. But after that, he became one of the big friends of the movement. He gave his key to the game commission and said, you know, you don't have to call me, just the key to the reservation fences. if they had a collared panther that was dying out there, or the collar wasn't moving, mm-hmm. they had permission to just go on there. Yeah. And he put an edict out: do not bother any of these panthers that are collared. You know, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. you know, from one bad thing led to a good thing.
Right.
Because
yeah.
in those early days, a lot of people did not like people out there. They felt like the panther, you know, going after the panther was going to ruin their world somehow. Mm. Especially the drug dealers. There were a lot of them out there in those days.
Wow. Yeah.
Pete, you have so much history on these things. Let's stay for coffee another time.
Yes.
Well,
as our theme song says, you'll learn some things about Florida that you might not know.
Right. Well, I thank you guys for.
Seriously,
I know it's a busy
so
day for you to taking the time off for this, but well, my wife and I are planning to be at these events later.
Great.
So
wonderful. We look forward to seeing you.
Yes, that'd be good.
3 p.m. at the factory for the artist talk, and then 6:30 is the screening. Bring a chair because it is an outdoor filming. But again, we'll have snacks and beverages and good company, and then you can explore Second Saturday's art walk after.
And give the address again.
It is at 2606 Fairfield Avenue South. And so if you are like me and you just like to pop it into your Google Maps, you can just search the fairgrounds, and you'll see everything set up. St. Pete Fairgrounds, yes. And then if you'd like to learn more about our organization, you can find us online at floridawildlifecorridor.org. And then our social medias are all at Florida Wildlife Corridor.